Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Deirdre McGlashan, the CMO at BrandGuard, which is an AI-powered governance tool. Now, we're going to be talking about creativity in digital marketing and how responsive design has kind of ruined creativity, how everything now looks like a Canva template, and can AI help us out at all? Check out the show notes to connect with Deirdre. Subscribe if you enjoy the pod. Let's get to it. Hi, Deirdre.
Hi, John.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. You're gonna get me on a rant. You're gonna get me on a rant. You really are, because it's creativity in digital marketing, and I don't know. I think we've lost something. I really do. But we'll talk.
I'm looking forward to it, because you'll get me on a rant as well.
Yeah. Good. So I'll tell you what. Tell everybody who you are. Give you about 20, 30 seconds. Tell everybody who you are, what you do. Go for it.
Fantastic. Hi, I'm Deirdre McGlashan. I'm the CMO at BrandGuard, the world's first AI-powered brand governance tool.
Fantastic. Oh, we've mentioned AI already. And we're not... what are we in? 40, 50 seconds in. We'll talk about AI a little bit later, because it is quite interesting, because I think it's probably going to help us become a little bit more creative. And that's...
I agree.
That's probably against what people generally try and think. But anyway... So what has happened? Because like everything's a Canva template. You kind of just, you look everywhere, don't you? And it's a freaking Canva template. I mean, Canva's great because you don't have to learn Photoshop, right? But the templates, oh, what's happened?
I agree. You know what? I blame responsive design. Do you remember when mobile and tablets came to the forefront and everybody went through this responsive design craze, which they had to because the designs had to fit for every format? But if you think about the really early days of the commercial internet, we had amazing experience. People focused on experiences. People focused on experiences and interactivity. And you had really wild experimentation. It was really innovative. And, you know, to be fair, sometimes too much. Not everything had to be a flash site. But yeah. I feel like we started out incredibly creative, and then logistics got us. So if you remember back in those old days, the QA template, you had to create a QA template because you had to know what computer and browser configurations your website was going to support. But It was a website. It was a big old website. So there was enough room to explain which ones you were supporting and which ones you weren't supporting. And also users more accepting of it. They're like, oh, okay, I get it. My machine's not fast enough. I'm not getting the full functionality. Because we were all still learning to use this and expectations were pretty low. Then bandwidth got bigger, costs came down, mobiles and tablets became really prevalent. And then now you throw in portrait, landscape, the technographics across that landscape, which version of Android, which particular handset manufacturer. It became impossible. There was no way to be able to create a QA grid and accommodate for everything. So we tried with Adaptive, which was to do a little browser sniff, like a device sniff, browser sniff, and to try to adapt it. But it was flawed, if you remember those as well. It worked sometimes. Yeah. It didn't work other times. Links sometimes didn't work. You couldn't see the navigation. So the response, unfortunately, was responsive design. And responsive design is how we got to those standardized templates with lots of background and endless scrolling.
Yeah.
And that's I hadn't thought of that.
I hadn't thought of responsive design as the reason. I remember flash sites.
Yes, exactly. Well, I blame this. To me, this is where it all started to go wrong when it comes to creativity in digital. Because I think genuinely the old stuff that we have, if creatives today could see the stuff that we were producing 25 years ago, I think they would be shocked. Do you know what I mean? I think they would be as shocked as we are when we find out, at least in the States from a film standpoint, how risque pre-code films were.
Yes.
When I think about old digital experiences and old digital marketing, that's kind of what I think about. But we ended up here, more devices, more media, more channels, more formats. And so I think we just got into this templated world because of it. But I don't think I think there's so much potential. I think there's potential in AI, but I think there's also so much potential just in digital. And I think that what gives me hope is when I see things where people really do something that can only be done in digital. And that gets me really excited. I don't know if you know the Snickers case from Australia. It was a can winner a few years ago. You're not yourself when you're hungry, but they partnered with 7-Eleven. This was fantastic. So what they did was they did social monitoring for the sentiment of Australia. And the angrier the country got, the cheaper the Snickers got. And so it was dynamic pricing with 7-Eleven. And it was just amazing. And so
it's
a very, obviously, a very digital concept. It could only be done with digital, and it had to be delivered through digital as well. So the delivery of the message of what the cost was, people started tracking it. You could see it on digital out of home. Digital doesn't have to be restricted to, you know, just the things we can stick in our pocket.
Kind of the argument against that, I suppose, in a way, is that our websites are just sort of like tools. We go on a website to find something, to do something, to get some information. So we don't need a flash site. We don't need animations. We don't need creativity. We just need the words and the text, and we just need the information. Like if I search for something, I get the results. If I go to a shop and I want to buy something, I buy it, and I just see pictures of my products. I don't want all this rubbish around it. That's kind of the argument against the creativity in a way, isn't it? Which is, again, I think why we're ending up with templates.
Well, I think there's two. I think that argument holds, because I think that a lot of people who are, quite frankly, their customers, their clients, their consumers just wanted information, and they put all this jazz around it. However, I would say that I'll go back to TVCs. I think this comparison could still be made of what you, like a cinema ad versus a really functional Geico, Progressive, a very basic ad that is about an ad, a product that is more a direct response type of piece of creative. So when you think about us in the States, Super Bowl is coming up, you've got the Super Bowl ads coming up. That is a really different execution of TVC than you see in a comparison site, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think there's space for both, and I think kind of we lost the concept that you could have experiences in the digital world.
Yeah. Do you think we don't give as much time and effort towards our digital content? Because like you mentioned, the Super Bowl ad, people will have spent millions and millions. They will have had the best creatives in the world thinking up the best ideas, the best things, just for a 30-second commercial. Now, I'm not saying you have to have all that information for a Facebook ad, for example. Of course you don't, no. But you would still need... But we don't even put any effort into a Facebook ad. Well, none at all. Do you know what I mean? It's just literally just like, you know, 20 minutes and we got it. And do you think there is kind of like a throwaway aspect to digital, that we don't think of it as publishing, we just think of it as churn?
I think there's a little bit of that. I think there's also a commercial element of it. It's interesting that you bring up Facebook, you know, just any new platform. Where I think we get most creative is when a platform is new, when a platform is brand new. Do you remember Snap when it got born?
Yeah.
TikTok when it got born? Even Facebook when it got born? People really, really experiment with it, and they really try to understand what the platform is, what the capabilities are, what are the native capabilities. And I think those first couple of years, from a creativity standpoint, are amazing, because you see the best stuff. Some of those early Snap things using AR, just absolutely incredible, and work for big brands. They are not all just, you know, personal projects. Some are really amazing big brand stuff.
Do you remember some of those Instagram grids, where you would have the different and they'd make up an image of their own by the individual? They're incredibly creative. You don't see a lot of that anymore, do you?
Exactly, but that was when Instagram was new. And I think what happens is the poor platforms have to monetize. And so what ends up happening is you start with an amazing amount of creativity, and then quite frankly, if they stay in the test and learn part of the budget, and then they never make it, because they never actually get the real dollars, the real media dollars that they need to thrive. And so what happens is kind of two things happen. One is that they have to start standardizing the formats in order to be able to have things that are more scalable for them to sell. And then I think the platforms become a little old hat. There's another platform. And so it's just easier to take some creative that works in another platform and resize it for this one. And I think, unfortunately, the commercials around media also don't help the situation.
Yeah, because there is kind of like a churn factor, isn't there? I mean, I suppose you don't churn movies unless you're Marvel or something and you need to be bringing out millions. But you don't churn books, you don't churn magazines. But, you know, we need to create 25 different Facebook ads or Instagram ads this afternoon. That there is a churn factor, which means we don't get to spend as much time on it, right?
Exactly. And I think also in the digital space, just because there are so many places to be, and if you look at a media buy in the digital space, you're going to see, you know, a zillion formats. Whereas if you look at any other channel, you just have a handful of formats. And so I think that's also where you get a lot of pressure to do more with less.
Yeah. Do you look at a digital content as publishing? Because this is something which, when I run training courses, I always try and get folks to think about it as publishing. Because when I worked in radio many, many years ago, if you created a radio program that nobody listened to, you would get fired, right? But you'd probably get two surveys, okay? And if you drop two surveys in a row, you'd be gone. You'd be out the door. You'd be fired, as simple as that. Because nobody's listening to what you're doing. We create blog posts. We create content. We create all sorts of stuff digitally. We throw it out on the internet, and absolutely nobody looks at it. And we keep our job. And we just do it again the following week. So do you think there's an aspect to, we should think of it as publishing rather than digital or content, that horrible content word?
Yep. No, I agree with you. I think that because of all the different channels and because people are trying to drive particular metrics, you know, this is how we end up with clickbait, for example. And so, yeah, there is a real crisis here, particularly in editorial and in news, for example.
So
if you think of all the publishers, they struggle to monetize, they struggle to pay their reporters, and it's a really, really critical area for humanity that we have independent writers that are doing investigative journalism, that are uncovering the truth. It's really, really important. So I think it covers everything from all the way from the very critical, like news, through to entertainment as well. And I think because of that, because the content isn't treated as publishing, as something I'm really proud of, that I take the time to do. People are posting 5 blog posts a day, sort of thing. So it is that churn. So therefore, the ad units that go with it also fall into that category. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because they're also seen as more transactional. They're just more temporal, I guess, is the word for it.
Yeah.
But I think that's why when you look at attention spent and you look at some of the platforms that are really, if you look at the drive, for example, for TikTok to go more towards long form, they're trying to get their creators to do more live streams and things like that. So I think that longer engagement, if that longer engagement becomes a metric, then we're going to see more care in the publishing. Does that make sense?
It does. It does indeed. Yeah. I think the longer you spend looking at it, maybe people think it's more worthwhile or something. I don't know.
Well, if you're going to ask somebody to spend 5 minutes with you, it's going to be very different than you're going to think about things, and the production value will be very different than you're asking somebody to watch a short for 5 to 7 minutes versus if you're asking somebody to sit with you for 90 to 120 minutes for a feature.
Yeah.
And I think it's also
absolutely
kind of having standards at all of those levels. I would never, you know, I would expect a short. I think there's a similarity for all of them. I would expect a short and a feature film to tell me a story and have good character development. And I think those are the commonalities. Story arcs, formats, all of those, very, very different between those two formats. And I feel like we don't even have those expectations or standards anymore.
Yeah, sure. Do you think workflows are too strict? Do you think this plays into a part of it where maybe we've got a checkbox list? You know, you create an article for your website or whatever it is, some digital content, and we have to check that keyword 6 times in the heading, in the title, blah blah blah, check, it's done, and all you do is you just go through the same tedious little checkbox every time you got to do it. Do you think that it doesn't help, does it?
It doesn't help. I think both of those drive it, but I think, you know, with the volume of assets needed these days, brand governance takes time. And a lot of people don't have that time, don't have those resources. And so it's just easier to force templates. And once again, I blame responsive design again, because I think that our expectations for creativity have gone down as a society. I mean, like I said, if you look at young people these days, they've never seen anything but a responsive website.
Yeah. Yeah,
that,
that's
that breaks
very
true. My heart.
Yeah, because I mean,
I
find responsive websites more difficult to use than desktop ones.
Exactly. I just feel like I'm scrolling forever. You know, I'm redesigning our website right now, and I'm really focusing on the tightness of the copy, and I'm really focusing on making sure that people don't have to scroll forever. And unfortunately, the template that we're using is one of those. So I work with the designer to like tighten up the spaces. I'm like, that's too much of a gap. So we tweak it as much as we can. But, you know, templates are just, they are the way of the world now, whereas I remember when I started, you know, even my producers, we were not, maybe not hand-coding HTML, but we were using a tool like Dreamweaver. And so we had a lot more flexibility in the designs that we were putting together. We were not locked into any particular template. And if we wanted to get fancier, we would go get the engineers to do something bespoke. But I think that, time is a huge problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So is AI going to help? Is it going to make us more creative? Is the content going to get better?
I hope so. I am so excited about AI. I really am. And I know you are as well. I mean, I feel like there's just so much potential there. Potential for ideation, potential for creation, and potential for experimentation. Experimentation, variance, and things like that. And I think because of that, I'm hoping that it allows people to free up the time to be much more creative, to be more thoughtful about the consumer, to be more thoughtful about the intersection of that brand and that particular consumer. But at that volume, how do you check it all? I think, you know, AI is going to exacerbate the problem of time, of being poor in time. And, you know, I'm going to plug my product here. This is why we built BrandGuard, actually. We built BrandGuard for this day because we believe that AI, used in the right way, can enhance creativity and support creativity. And the way you support creativity is by ensuring that it can be governed so that you don't have to throw everybody into a restrictive workflow. And so using AI, in a way, using AI to manage AI. And so by understanding a brand, by being trained on a brand's guidelines, our system can then understand that brand and be able to judge the creative. And so if you think about it as being able to scale your best brand manager so that that brand manager can not look at 10 assets a day, but can look at 10,000 assets a day. And that brand manager will look at the system and say, okay, these are the 10 that I should focus on for today out of all of those. Everything else has either passed or failed, and these are the ones that need human intervention, need something to decide on. And so we think about this as quality assurance at the brand level. Because we think a lot about quality assurance, but we think about quality assurance at the product level, at the application level, at the program level. So we think about this as quality assurance at the brand level for marketers.
Yeah, I like the idea of it for ideas and thoughts, because my idea is that if you can't just switch on creativity, you can't just click a switch and go, I'm going to be creative now. Right. There are people who can do that. And those are the people who are the A-list movie stars. Those are the people who are the top music, you know, the artists, the writers, the authors. They can probably do that, right? Because they're so good at it. And that's why they're so successful. But the average person creating Facebook ads, like me, I can't just turn on creativity like that. But the AI will give us some help, won't it? It'll give us the ideas. Exactly. It'll give us the thoughts. If we're sat there and we're looking and we're thinking to ourselves, our company sells bolts. How can I make a bolt look interesting today? You know, the AI might be able to help us, right?
Exactly. I think so. I really do. I think that the AI will be able to help us. It'll be able to invent new variations in the same way that you might go look at, you know, you might go look at everybody, when they're trying to come up with an idea, goes to the resources. Everybody flips through the resources to get inspiration. And I think that's a huge part of what AI is going to do, is just give people endless resources for inspiration.
How do we guard against the copy-paste? Sort of like AI, give me an 800-word article about this, that, and the other, and we just go copy, paste, publish, because we don't want to do anything else. How do we? Because, I mean, there's companies selling that stuff now and pushing it straight out to Google, right? How do we guard against that?
Well, I think that every author and every brand has a tone of voice. And I think that that tone of voice is really important. And so if you make that a metric, if you make that really important, then that eliminates the ability to copy and paste. I mean, it might be, it's kind of the 10,000 monkeys and 10,000 typewriters thing. Maybe once the AI will hit it spot on and write Shakespeare. However, most of the time, it's going to need some tweaking. It's going to need some manipulation. And so once again, as we think about BrandGuard, that's what it does. It can take that first pass and say you're 70% on brand. Tweak this one. This one's 25% on brand. Bin it. And then that way you can kind of just choose the ones that you can, once again, saving time, find the ones that is most time efficient for you to manipulate. And then just bin the rest. Because quite frankly, right now with generative AI, you can produce hundreds of pieces, hundreds of variations in minutes. Are you going to publish hundreds? No. Out of that hundreds, there's going to be one or two, three decent ones that you can make excellent. But you need to know which ones they are, because you're not going to read them all. But I think that these are the things. If you hold your look and feel and your tone of voice, regardless if you are a publisher or a media creator or a brand, I think if you hold those things as very valuable, you spend so much time developing it, why wouldn't you make it valuable? If those become your most valuable assets, I think that's what would prevent the copy-paste and the dumbing down of everything.
So is BrandGuard, is that kind of like listening to you? Does it know your voice and tone? Is it kind of like listening to the voice and tone? And then is it trying to figure out whether what you've got is right?
What it does is we ingest this. If you have a style guide, if you're a brand and you have a style guide, we ingest a style guide. If you're just, and also what we call training assets. So the training assets are exemplary examples of your brand voice. So exemplary assets of your look and feel and your tone of voice. If you're just a writer, if you're just a publisher, you would feed it 20, 30 examples of what you think is your best work, the stuff you're most proud of, that you think sounds most like you. And AI learns that that's what you sound like, that you would use these words and not these words. Because what you would also do is give it 20 to 30 that you wouldn't use, what we call off-brand assets. And so with those off-brand assets, it starts to see that delta between you might use the word artisanal, but you would never use the word purified, for example. Yeah. And it's like, exactly. So then it can kind of rank it on that.
Is there any sort of plagiarism check? Is there any copyright check or anything like that? Because I know there's a lot of authors and artists getting a little bit upset because they're doing some stuff in OpenAI and it's literally giving them paragraphs of their books, which is kind of a bit cheeky, to be fair. So is there some sort of check going on to say we can publish this confidently?
Yeah, so we're building out these modules that we call compliance modules. And those compliance modules would include copyright and trademark. If we know your category, then we'll know what to ingest, what to train on. There's also some highly regulated areas when it comes to advertising, such as pharma and finance. And so some of our customers there want us to build out models that are just for pharma or just for finance so they can do those checks as well. Because as you know, if you break any of those rules, that's a no-fly zone.
Because I saw one earlier today, which I thought was quite interesting. There's an AI for designing user interfaces, apparently, and you tell it what you want, and that asked them to create a user interface for a professional level camera app for an iPhone, and they came up with it, and they gave it the prompt was quite long, quite in depth, and they came up with it. But right in the settings section, that this AI, it was actually the name of a current camera app, which was already out there. And it's like, oh man, if we didn't notice that.
Exactly. It's really interesting because there's a man named Noah Breyer, and I was watching a presentation he was giving, and he said that as he was prompting AI to do brand collaborations. And he said, what's really fascinating is because of, and it was just, I believe it was ChatGPT or something. I think it was something that was OpenAI. So it's been trained on public, public facing things. And so he said every collab that he wanted to do with a sneaker, very often, and this is in America, because I'm sure the brand would be slightly different elsewhere, most of them had a swoosh. Even if he hadn't prompted Nike. And so a lot of it is just kind of what the AI has been fed is what it believes. It can't separate a brand from the product itself, especially when it's something quite ubiquitous. It is the Kleenex, for example, for tissues. It struggles to separate those things. So that is exactly one of those areas that's going to be, that needs to be governed as well. So that's why we have that compliance module. But back to what you were saying in terms of things being easy. My boss, Rob, has a really interesting, he talks about, it's really interesting. He said, the one thing that AI can do is it can make mediocre, it can make bad stuff mediocre. But what it can't do is it can't make mediocre stuff good. And so for him, and that's part of the other reason that he started BrandGuard, for him it's that, that delta between mediocre and good, what lives in there? And that is your brand. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And so that is why we believe that branding and really having a true, like really truly knowing your architect, your archetype, your tone of voice, and your look and feel, be you a publisher, a content creator, or a brand, that's going to be the difference in the future.
Yeah, and I suppose there is the argument that you don't always need to be brilliant. You don't always need to be super creative. It is fine and it is okay just to churn out boilerplate content if that's meeting your goals and selling you whatever you're selling.
Completely, exactly. Hmm. And so it's knowing, you know, where you fit, what services or products you provide, who your customer is, and quite frankly, what are all of the commercials around that, and making sure that you're focused in the right area so that you are producing a quality, you know, ultimately, your product has to be quality, be it your writing, your content, or your physical product, and your target audience has to be right for that as well. It has to be the right match. Yeah.
So we've all still got our jumps for a little while longer. We can.
I think so. I mean, you know, if Rob's right, then, you know, if those people who are pushing for excellence are going to be all right.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's just going to be very competitive in that mediocre area.
Yeah. It's been fascinating. I could chat for hours and hours about this, to be fair. Where can we find BrandGuard? Where's your website?
You can find us at brandguard.ai, and you can also find us on LinkedIn and Instagram.
Fantastic. What I'll do, I'll stick some links in the show notes and folks can give them a quick tap. Simple as that.
That sounds fantastic. I'll send them over to you right after this.
Fantastic. Deirdre, thanks ever so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was really fun, John.
Thanks again to Deirdre for her time. Don't forget to check out all the links in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed this episode, subscribe for more. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts, just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.